Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler back with you on this Monday night. And today, the Senate confirmation hearings for Sonia Sotomayor to be the next Supreme Court justice began on Capitol Hill. And now it's time to look back on what happened today. So on the line with us is Doug Kendall. He's the president and founder of the Constitutional Accountability Center. Find them online at theusconstitution.org. And Doug is also live blogging the confirmation hearings of Judge Sotomayor for Huffington Post. And Doug, that's how I found you. I've been reading your stuff all day today, and you're doing a great job.
Well, it's been an exciting day.
I bet.
The first time we've been hearing critics talk about Judge Sotomayor for the last 5 or 6 weeks, and finally the judge gets to speak herself. So it was a big day for her and a big day in the process.
Okay, then let's start at the end, because she spoke for about 10 minutes or close to it at the end of today's session. How did you think she did?
I think she did very well. I think she did a very nice job of stating the affirmative case for her nomination. I think there was some question about how much she would take on in terms of some very pointed criticism that was leveled at her record by Senate Republicans. And I think she stayed above the fray. She simply stated the affirmative case for her nomination, and I think she'll deal with the criticism tomorrow in her responses to questions. And I think that was probably what the strategy was, that they wanted her to positively state her case without going down to the level of the Senate Republicans were trying to thin some things out of context and make what I think is a pretty bold and unsubstantiated case about her ability to fairly follow the law.
Here's the part of her testimony that you referred to as the key passage of her opening statement, Judge Sotomayor.
Throughout my 17 years on the bench, I have witnessed the human consequences of my decisions. Those decisions have not been made to serve the interest of any one litigant, but always to serve the larger interest of impartial justice. In the past month, many senators have asked me about my judicial philosophy. Simple. Fidelity to the law. The task of a judge is not to make law, it is to apply the law. And it is clear, I believe, that my record in two courts reflects my rigorous commitment to interpreting the Constitution according to its terms, interpreting statutes according to their terms and Congress's intent, and hewing faithfully to precedents established by the Supreme Court and by my circuit court. In each case I have heard, I have applied the law to the facts at hand. The process of judging is enhanced when the arguments and concerns of the parties to the litigation are understood and acknowledged. That is why I generally structure my opinions by setting out what the law requires and then explaining why a contrary position, sympathetic or not, is accepted or rejected. That is how I seek to strengthen both the rule of law and faith in the impartiality of our judicial system. My personal and professional experiences help me to listen and understand, with the law always commanding the result in every case.
Judge Sonia Sotomayor from her opening statement today at the confirmation hearings. We're speaking with Doug Kendall from the Constitutional Accountability Center, who's also live blogging the hearings for Huffington Post. All right, Doug, let's back up a little bit and tell me a little bit about the Constitutional Accountability Center. What do you guys do there?
We're a law firm, think tank, and action center dedicated to the progressive promise of the Constitution's text and history. So the idea is to say to someone like Justice Scalia that you're right, that the Constitution's text and history is really important. It's something that judges should wrestle with in every day of their career, but that it favors progressive, not conservative, outcomes across a broad range of constitutional debates. And so we're a think tank, meaning we write reports and books and articles. Law firm, we file lawsuits, file briefs in Supreme Court and lower court cases. Action center, we do things like work on the Sotomayor confirmation.
Great. And you are based in Washington, D.C., so you've had
That's
a,
correct.
You have a bird's eye view for the hearings every day. Where are you sitting?
We were actually today sitting in the skybox looking down on the confirmation hearing. It's a great view. You get to see behind the scenes of what is being passed to the senators and probably see them doing things they don't want anybody to focus on. But, that's fine. Nothing too scandalous.
Right. Now, how do people get the tickets to sit in the audience?
There are some public seats, and that's actually the big excitement from today was there were a handful of anti-abortion protesters that must have been there from very early on this morning who were there and were periodically screaming out and getting kicked out of the room. Finally, I think the entire public audience was thrown out.
Oh, really?
Because it happened so much.
Right, and I found that really interesting because from what I can tell, that seems to be one of the areas that we don't really have a record on which to figure out how Justice Sotomayor might rule on abortion cases.
I think that's right. There's Judge Sotomayor has virtually no public record on abortion issues. They are, I think, entirely basing their concerns on concerns about President Obama rather than anything Judge Sotomayor has done. I guess the closest they come to an argument about her views on choice or the fact that she was on the board of an organization 20 years ago that took a pro-Roe position in a brief.
Okay. Well, again, I don't see that as...
It's a very thin read. As much of the conservative case against Judge Sotomayor is put together from really thin reads of evidence that are often contradicted by her judicial record. So the one abortion case that she's heard was a case involving a Bush administration policy that limited funding for abortions in overseas development projects. And she upheld that.
Right.
So the one ruling she has that's relevant is a ruling which you could describe as pro-life, and yet you still have anti-abortion protesters acting as if this is the most important issue in the confirmation.
Right. And what's interesting is I saw an article over the weekend that I believe the National Organization for Women hasn't even been that much in the forefront in supporting her because they don't know how she'll rule on such cases.
Right. I think there's organizations that wish she had more of a record
That's
on that
right.
issue.
Doug Kendall is with us. He's the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, theusconstitution.org, and he's live blogging for Huffington Post. We'll take a break. Be right back with Doug and more on today's confirmation hearings of Sonia Sotomayor.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler. Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler back with you, and we are speaking with Doug Kendall from the Constitutional Accountability Center. He's live blogging the confirmation hearings of Sonia Sotomayor for the Supreme Court for Huffington Post. So let's go back and find out what happened today. Today was just for opening statements, right? No questioning happening.
You had 19 Judiciary Committee senators giving their opening remarks, no more than 10 minutes apiece. And Senator Leahy was actually quite strict about enforcing that limit. So there was one of the biggest pieces of tension today was between Senator Leahy and Senator Gillibrand from New York, who went over her time limit and was reprimanded a little bit by the chair.
I noticed that, too. That was in her intro to...
Right. So she was given 5 minutes to introduce the judge and went considerably over.
Did
that
she not realize she had a time limit?
I don't know what the issue there was. I think she... Probably knew she'd gone over the limit, just had two long remarks and wanted to finish them. And yeah, everybody else had followed by the rules, so Senator Leahy was not going to be very tolerant of it.
Well, you know, she's new. She's the one who stepped into Hillary Clinton's seat. And so,
right.
You know, I guess she got a little enamored of the spotlight or something.
I don't know what the backstory there was, but that was a little excitement. But no, so there were 19 speeches. They got a little repetitive by the end. I think the Republicans were very consistent in their attack on Judge Sotomayor. They kind of string together this idea that President Obama wants judges with empathy, with some of her statements taken out of context, and they use that to say that she can't be trusted to rule neutrally in cases. That's their affirmative case against Judge Sotomayor. I think Democrats did a very good job of establishing her credentials, establishing her record. I think there's a little bit of – Democrats are a little bit torn about how to respond to the empathy point. Some are very strongly defending the benefit of having judges with different perspectives and appreciating different points of view. Others are describing Judge Sotomayor's record as being very much one of simply following the law. But there's a little tension, and I think Judge Sotomayor has to kind of put those two ideas together and make them work. And I think that's her burden for tomorrow as she's responding to the Republican attacks on her record and on her judicial philosophy.
Doug Kendall is with us. He is live blogging the confirmation hearings of Sonia Sotomayor for Huffington Post. He's the founder and president of the Constitutional Accountability Center. You can find them online at theusconstitution.org. Now, as is the case with any of these kind of hearings, they can be a bit dry at times. So you've added a little bit of fun to the proceedings with a couple of drinking games. Wise Latina, that's being used by a lot of the conservatives, huh?
Yeah, I think if you were doing shots for that one, you would have been drunk by about noon today. And Democrats were saying umpire a lot.
Now, can you explain that one for me? Because I don't get the history on that one.
Chief Justice Roberts, very famously at his confirmation hearings, described himself as an umpire, simply calling balls and strikes. And I think was very successful in kind of diffusing attacks against him by saying, look, I just follow the law. And I think since that point, it's kind of defined what the debate is about the Supreme Court. Do you want people who are just umpires, just calling balls and strikes? Do you want someone who is more concerned or more focused on doing justice and kind of understanding all the litigants before them and understanding the role of law in society? And so the Democrats on the committee have been basically trying to, one, say that Chief Justice Roberts hasn't been an umpire. He's been quite activist in a lot of areas and has, in fact, followed rule based on his own personal policy preferences rather than just calling balls and strikes. So that's one part of it. And second, there's a idea that, and I think this is where the empathy point comes in, which is that a judge's role is more than simply calling balls and strikes. They have to decide some of the most difficult and far-reaching legal questions that this country faces, and that requires judgment, that requires wisdom. It requires more than simply a mechanical or an automaton who's enforcing straightforward rules. And so, I think that Chief Justice Roberts has really defined the turf in some ways, and Democrats are still kind of responding to it.
Gotcha. So it had nothing to do with Judge Sotomayor's ruling in the baseball strike.
No, there was a time where I forget it. I think it was Senator Graham said, it sounds like we're having a confirmation hearing for Chief Justice Roberts again rather than for Sonia Sotomayor with how much we're talking about umpires.
Right. Speaking of Lindsey Graham, he said, you'll be okay as long as you don't have a meltdown. Wasn't that a bit patronizing?
Well, I think they're, you know, that part of the, I think the whole very thinly sourced, very thinly based case that Republicans are trying to make is a question of Judge Sotomayor's temperament. You know, does she, there was this early on piece by Jeff Rosen in the New Republic that suggested that Judge Sotomayor could be short on the bench without really any solid evidence for it. And since that time, there's been this question that has been raised, although never documented, that there are temperament issues with Judge Sotomayor. And I think that's what he's obliquely referring to, although, again, there was no evidence whatsoever introduced at the hearing today to support those claims.
So it wasn't just patronizing. It was actually a pretty pointed, somewhat rude comment.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's a suggestion about Judge Sotomayor that would be damning if true, and that there's very little basis for or no basis for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what he's getting at. And I think one of the things that Republicans are hoping may happen is that some of their pointed questions provokes an angry reaction by Judge Sotomayor. I don't think it'll happen, but that's, I think, you know, they want her either to stumble badly in one of her responses or to react in an angry way, which can support a claim that she lacks judicial temperament necessary to be on the Supreme Court. I think those are really their only two hopes for turning a nomination that seems to be sailing towards an easy confirmation into something more of a battle.
Interesting. All right, we did witness one piece of history today, aside from the whole, you know, confirmation hearings of a potential U.S. Supreme Court justice, and that was the first official duties of the newly sworn-in Senator Al Franken. How did he do?
Well, I think it's I put in the blog today, if his goal was to prove himself to be sober, serious, and unfunny, he succeeded. His remarks were, I think, fairly typical of the other senators. He was very respectful of his colleagues,
mm-hmm.
trying to reach out across the aisle to say that he would work with his Republican friends on the committee, saying, being deferential about how much he had to learn from all his colleagues. I think the one thing that he said that was both different and a little inspiring was he noted that this was the first hearing since 1965 when President Johnson's nomination of Abe Fortas went to the Senate, that Ted Kennedy wasn't sitting on the Senate Judiciary Committee evaluating the nominee. So I think that was a powerful and I think it's something that really needed to be remarked on. It was and one of the more poignant moments of the morning. I think everyone kind of looked around at that moment and realized how sad that was and how much Senator Kennedy's spirit was missing from the Senate Judiciary Committee today.
That is interesting. Okay, so what do we have to look forward to tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is when the main event really begins. I think when anyone thinks about a Supreme Court nomination, you think about the questions and answers. That's really what the constitutional advice and consent process is all about. Senators get to ask long-winded questions. Nominees get to give fairly evasive answers that don't really say how they'll vote on things. And so that is what will happen tomorrow. We'll have rounds of questions. Each senator will get a certain amount of time to ask the questions they have. And then once it goes through all 19 of them, they each have their chance to ask questions. You'll go through it again until there's really not any questions left to ask. And so that'll happen probably over the next 2 days, starting at 9:30 tomorrow.
Okay, and you will be there live blogging again at HuffingtonPost.com.
That's right.
And we'll be following along, and we'll check in again tomorrow night and get a recap of the day.
Okay, thanks, Nicole.
And that's it for today. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow night once again on Air America.